What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Kill Shot UFC DraftKings DFS and betting breakdown. Doing it all here. With me to break it down, the dream team. We got the mathematician, aka the monkematician. He's a monk of math. Monk. Down below, he's the hooper, the hyper, protected by sniper. What's up?
I am not hyper today. As you guys know, I've been on kid duty tonight. I'm dragging ass as anybody with kids knows, but I'm good. I'm ready to break down these fights. If I said it on Twitter, if there's ever a fight that was going to start at 1 o'clock, this card should be
it. It does not start at one.
I wish it did.
I'm out tomorrow. Like Saturday night, I got shit going on. I can't remember. I know the wife made plans.
Yep. I'm going to a show, and honestly, I'm not mad about it.
What kind
I'll
of check, show?
I'll watch
what
it my
show
phone.
Are you going to see?
We're going to see, I think it's a local musical. I think it's, what do they do? I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change.
Sounds show. Terrible. That sounds terrible.
It's supposed to be funny. And then, in 2 months, we're going to see Clue. I'm excited for that one.
That I can deal with. But this other one that you just mentioned, that sounds awful. it's a nightmare.
Is it really that much worse?
I'd rather go out to dinner with strangers and have to get to know them.
Oh, fuck that. No.
Then go to that show.
As long as whoever can sing, no. I'll sit there quietly with my cocktail, and I that's fine. Versus, right. Oh, what do you do for a living? I don't fucking care.
Stranger dinner, I'd rather
go watch a show, man.
That rom-com or whatever that thing is. All right, listen. We're talking UFC fights, okay? And as much as the card on paper doesn't look that good, it's still there's money to be made. All right, there's DFS to be played. There's money to be made.
The lineups will be set.
Yeah, and I think there are some clear spots, some interesting spots, some weird spots. There's a lot of spots going on in this card. So let's start it out with the first fight of the night, and that's Mo Usman taking on Michael Perrin.
How is this the first fight of the night?
It's the first fight.
There are so many worse fights.
The guy's last name is Usman. Doesn't make it like he's good. All right, so Muhammad Usman taking on Michael Parkin. Yes, that's Kamaru's little brother, for little baby brother.
Yeah, okay.
Not anywhere near as good at UFC fighting as Marty is. Yes. I think Muhammad got into football or other sports. That's what happened with him. So in this case, Parkin's coming in as a minus 140 favorite. The comeback on Usman here is plus 120. This is a heavyweight banger. And yet, the over 2.5 round prop is minus 160, meaning this fight is lined more likely than not to go to decision, which is a bad, bad scene when you're talking about low volume type of fighters, the way that Usman and Parkin probably are. But Monk, tell me a little bit about this fight from your perspective. Numbers wise, I mean, these guys, not super high volume guys, but Parkin, either one could go for a takedown. There's some grappling potential here.
You know, most of the time I'm pretty stoked for low level heavyweights. It usually means they're going to be swinging and banging, or one guy can't wrestle, and so one guy just scores a bunch of points. But neither one of these guys are 5-0 total in the UFC against, not great competition. And the highest score either of them have put up is 85 points. And that was in a second round KO. It only gets worse from there. Both of their defensive stats are actually very good. I know I just said they haven't fought anybody, but still neither of them allow even 1.8 points per minute. That's two of the better numbers on the entire card. Inside the distance, it's well under 1 point a minute allowed for both of these guys. Parkin's averaging 85. Usman's averaging 81. I don't know, man. I agree with the bookies. I think this one does go to decision, and I think the winner probably scores 75 to 85. Even at these salaries, which are, lower to low mid-range, 84 and 7,800, I'm just not interested. I mean, both guys scoring okay per minute at over 3 points per. But like I said, it's that DraftKings points per win. They're constantly going to decision, or even when they are finishing fights in that one fight against Paunga, there was no volume whatsoever. There was no takedown. It was basically just caught you with a shot in the second, and I got all the bonus points. So I'm probably going to pick Parkin, although I am not confident in that. Wouldn't be surprised if Usman got the nod, but again, I'm thinking decision. Winner scores 75-85, and we can keep it moving on this one, in my opinion.
There's a lot of fights on this card. You do not, and as a matter of fact, if you try to force it, you're going to be screwed.
Here's the thing. I'm going double opposite of Monk. The first one, I'm taking Usman. I'll explain it why. And that's
you're
but double I'm not,
opposite. That means you're agreeing with me.
No. Opposite in terms of two items. One, I'm taking Usman. I'll circle back there in a second. That's not super confident, but he is my pick. Two, you're right in that, you know, on paper, fight doesn't appear to be scoring great. If you look at the whole mid-range, and you look at the whole card, the mid-range is hot garbage this week. And I would argue this is the best of the hot garbage fights. Like, we can, like, don't get sucked into Simon and Talbot. Great fight. For DFS, not much interest, honestly. Same things. Miles Johns, Cody Gibbs. Like, where are the points in this range outside of the Billy Q? So I'll fight. And that's 86,
I think the 76. Billy Q Zalal is terrible, too.
So the whole mid-range, I do not like. And at least here, the way I have this, you got heavyweights. Yeah, I know what the numbers are, but they're more likely to get knockouts. And honestly, I think Muhammad Usman's got a wrestling advantage in this fight. What I saw from Mick Parkin last time out, I did not like. I think the UFC is very smart. Dana White just declared Kamaru Usman the best welterweight of all time, which is fucking bananas and for a different podcast. But still, they're going to try.
I want to argue that.
It's George Rochambeau Pierre, period, end of story.
Yeah, but if Usman, you know, if the knees don't go bad, he looked like he was on his way.
He looked like he was, but one of the things about George St. Pierre. He kept it going for a long, long time. Not that Usman isn't great, and he's in the conversation. I'll even give you, he's in the conversation. But anyway, I do think that the UFC is going to try and build another Usman star. He's not going to get there. He's got the wrestling upside in this fight. Am I super confident he's going to put up 100? Absolutely not. Do I think he can get 90 with multiple takedowns, controlled? Remember, you get points just for laying on people now. And the little pity pat strikes all score. I think he can get 85-90. And I think in this mid-range, I don't hate it, especially because he's the cheaper fighter. It's a dog play I am taking. The whole mid-range is ass. So give me Muhammad Usman.
The judges are robbing you of your win bonus these days if you're laying on top.
You know what? That's a fair point.
That cost me bullshit. The win last week.
The anti-wrestling hate has gone way too far. Go watch fucking boxing.
Like, yeah.
Just with this fight, these guys are so low volume. For Usman to get there, Sniper, he like really has to do a lot more than he normally does. Even when he's in top position, and again, not to say he's going to do it again, he doesn't throw strikes from top position. He just lays there. And that doesn't score well enough. Like in the fight against whoever the hell is most recent opponent, against Taffa. He takes Taffa, he's controlling him for 12 minutes. You know how many strikes he landed? Very few, like only 7 significant and only 70-ish non-significant strikes, the little love taps, right? You're controlling a guy for effectively all 3 rounds, the entirety. You need to be, I mean, let me put it like this. I don't care. You don't need to do anything. But if you're going to score well on DraftKings, you need to be active because even a heavy takedowns laden win against Justin Taffa, and Justin Taffa's worse than Mick Parkin, especially as a wrestler. Like once Justin Taffa's down, he's not even threatening to get back up. Like I think Parkin will probably get back up, but like Taffa's not even threatening. Like he doesn't have any ability, and we'll talk about that when we get to. I think there's a Taffa fight on this card.
Yeah, one of them's back.
Yeah, we got one of the Taffas. They're the same. They're the same guy. But he just didn't throw a lot, and that upsets me a little bit. But that being said, none of the fights look all that exciting. So to full fade something, you know, let's get through the breakdown, but there just might not be any spots to full fade anything, and that just because they're all a little bit sketch. So let's jump over to fight number 2. We've got Igor Da Silva taking on Andre Lima. Lima a -180 favorite in this one. Igor +155. Let's see. Fight ends inside the distance -165. Let's see. Lima inside the distance +130. Da Silva +500. So Lima has a reasonable inside the distance prop on this one. Monk, how do you see this one playing out from a numbers perspective?
Normally, I'd be around field weight for two guys, two Dana White Contender Series fighters that are now fighting each other, especially at flyweight. Generally a weight class where we see more decisions than we do finishes. That doesn't always hurt the scoring, but just kind of a little fact. If you were to put Dana White scoring on these DWCS fights, Lima went all three rounds with Hickson Zenadim and would have scored less than 70 points, while Igor Severino fought what can only be described as like a wild man.
Yeah.
Almost 10 strikes a minute.
Yes.
7.5 minutes, 2 knockdowns, 5 takedowns, 33% control time.
That's what I like.
151 in two rounds, guys. 151. You only get 70 for the bonus in the second. So he would have scored 81 points straight up without the bonus in 7 minutes. That's wild. So since the salaries are such that Lima is much more expensive at 9K and Severino is at 7,200, I'm going to have more Severino than Lima. That said, I will still have around field weight of Lima just because, I mean, you know, we've seen this before. Wild man act in the UFC. If you don't get it in the first or early second, it really doesn't pay off because you're probably dead tired after that. Or you get caught at any time from making crazy mistakes. So, yeah, I'm going to play both sides. But I do like how I get a big price break on the wild man. So give me both sides. I'm actually probably going to pick Severino outright just because why not? And yeah, I like them both for DraftKings, but I like Severino more since he's cheaper.
Yeah, I love me some Severino. I pick Severino straight up. It's I think the volume and the aggression are going to be the difference. Lima's good. He's technical. BJJ black belt. But like Monk said, Severino's got way more upside. I think it's more of a coin flip fight. Frankly, I think the line is off. I kind of agree with Kyle. I think this line is off. Yeah, he fights a little crazy, but that lends itself. That's the only reason I'm interested in Lima. If Severino didn't fight like that, like no interest in Lima. Then again, Severino threw it. He threw all that strikes. He slowed down. He didn't look like he was gassed out. Like it took him a while to get the finish because they're flyweights and all that. I don't know. He didn't look like he was getting that tired to me. If anyone can throw like that and keep going, it's probably a flyweight. So give me some Severino. This is a good fight to target. Kind of echo what Monk said, although I think I'm a little bit stronger on the Severino side. In fact, I know I am because unless somebody steals him, that's my kill shot.
Just look at these numbers. It's crazy. When I looked at this, I was like, wait, is this for real? I love these kind of fighters. 9 strikes per minute, 9 takedowns per 15. So effectively, we're just looking at the one fight, but he went nuts in there. And what happens with these kind of fighters is what you guys said. Either the crazy man wins, and great, he probably is going crazy and winning, which is how the Igor Severino, or why is he not winning? Well, if you're bringing that kind of heat, your opponent isn't winning by just standing back and dodging it. They have to overdo. So even if Lima is not inclined to be a wild man, he's going to have to be going up against a guy like Severino. So this style of fight leads to big points. I totally agree. I think Severino is absolutely one of the better underdog plays on the card or somebody I'll be targeting heavily. And I like both sides of the fight, though. I don't know who's going to win, but I would assume that the winner of the fight is going to do really well on DraftKings. Both guys can get a takedown as well. So they do all the things that you want for a DraftKings fight. And so I'm going to be on both sides of that one. And certainly I love playing the underdog Severino if I can, because getting an underdog win is how you win on DraftKings. All right, guys, if you're enjoying the breakdown, remember to hit that like button. You're watching the DFS Army Kill Shot UFC breakdown. We're talking Namujanas versus Hibas. And next up on the card, we've got we got the ladies fighting here. Montserrat Rendon taking on Daria Zelenkia.
Here we go.
I've tried this all week.
Here we go.
Zeleznikova is how I've been saying it. I think I'm missing a syllable in there, but just go with Zeleznikova.
Zeleznikova. Zeleznikova.
There you go. Just pretend you're
Monk. He sends us the money, so I'm gonna bail him out.
Just pretend you're Malkovich from Rounders.
Yeah. You should have paid me.
Splash the pot whenever.
Splash the pot if I feels like it.
Yeah.
Do a Boris impression.
Teddy KGB has his own unique accent. That's not even Russian. It's just its own thing. pay this man his money. All right. So anyway, Montserrat taking on Daria. Okay. Daria minus 210 is the favorite. The comeback on Montserrat is plus 180. Fight ends inside the distance. A very surprising minus 220. Like a finish on this ladies fight. Let's get a look at these two gals. Both are fairly new to the fighting scene, so to speak, in terms of just not many fights, right? 6-0, Montserrat Rendon. Really, really slow. Not an impressive striker at all, but has the grappling. Then, of course, you've got Daria over here. Looks, got a little OnlyFans vibe coming from some of these photos. And she is more of a striker than a grappler from what I have seen. So, Monk, do you have any thoughts on this one? Just in general, I mean, ladies fights at 135 tend to score surprisingly well.
Yeah, I think this one's just too wide. And when I see that, I just automatically look at the underdog. You're right. Neither of them even have 10 fights, respectively between but Rendon at 7,400, I mean, she came through at 72, and actually, I don't think she made the optimal lineup. She was 7,200, scored 89 points in her win against Tamares Vidal, which was kind of close, but on the stats, I mean, she outstruck her by 9 strikes, 69 to 60, so almost 5 strikes a minute to 4. She landed 3 takedowns and controlled basically an entire round out of the 15, so I wouldn't say dominant, but a decent showing for your UFC debut, especially when you're, 34 years old at the time. Daria has, I think, 3 round 1 KOs, 2 round 2 KOs, and I think she herself has been KO'd once. 8,800 is just a lot for me to put on, especially a women's bantamweight. Really, women's flyweight is the weight class you're really looking for decent scoring. But 8,800 is just a bit much, so I'm probably just going to pick Rendon straight up and just see what happens. I'll have an average amount of her as far as DraftKings goes, and I don't know about Daria, man. 8,800, I mean, the inside the distance line would tell me that I have to play an okay amount, which I probably will, but I need to see it first from somebody like this before I'm just throwing like 30% to the wind, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. What do you think here, Sniper? Let's see. Daria inside the distance, plus 210. Rendon inside the distance, plus 175. That's interesting.
I'm on the Rendon side too, but I can quote my you should get in DFS Army and read the notes and all that stuff. And I mean, the first line of my notes here, I think kind of sums it all up really well. Really simple here for me. Who the fuck knows? Like, this is just a super
basically cool,
I'm gonna expand on low that
level fight. If I had to make a guess, if you're doing some wiki gapping, I'll take geeks route here. Look, Jelitsnikova is a prospect at 8.8k. She's got a loss to Melissa Mullins, who's Melissa Dixon, who's on this card, and a decision win against Leanna Jojua.
That's Melissa Dixon.
Yes.
Oh shit.
First of all, Leanna Jojua to not finish her.
Yeah, that was the first thing I went and looked at. I'm like, oh, that's bad. Melissa Tanya Mullins was Melissa Dixon. See, there's the Arena Alexeva fight. We'll talk about her later. Honestly, just Rendon, she's also going to be big. I believe she's going to be stronger. If she's going to win, I think it's takedowns and a submission. Daria, I guess, is live to a knockout. Honestly, though, it's the kind of fight where if either one ends up in top position, I don't think either one's good enough to get off the bottom, which, make your Sun Tzu joke there. Love you, Sun Tzu. So give me Rendon, dog. I think she's stronger. I see some red flags in Daria, and there's always one or two fights in every card. That's why I say it every week, but it holds true every week. I'm not going to let this fight beat me. Like, I'll just kind of, I'm probably not going to win because of my stance on this fight, but I'm not going to let this one beat me because who the fuck knows?
You know, to expand on your wiki capping thing, and who the fuck knows? And, no disrespect to any women fighters, right? They're badass chicks, all that. But until you get to either at worst Invicta or something like that, the people that the fighters that you're going up against generally in things like Combate or
Aries
is the worst one. Like, you know, Aries, what is this, right? Who are these opponents?
There's Aries twice.
Yeah, this Aries stuff. Like, who are these opponents? You have no idea if they're any good. So all we could really, I watched Daria's a couple of her fights, and she's a striker. Like, I don't see her getting on top of Montserrat. I didn't see her doing that at all. So I think she's just going to box, and she's decent at it. But like, if you're beating up soccer moms in Aries, all right. the takedowns. So Montserrat, I always lean to the takedowns. Like, if there's a girl who's a grappler and has like some submission capabilities, that usually wins in these type of fights. So yeah, I'm gonna lean with the underdog as well here, but I agree with you. I don't want to let this one beat me either. Daria definitely knocking people out, or a few people, really bad people out, but nonetheless, she's done it, could do it again. But I think Montserrat is the better side here, because if she's winning, there's a takedown involved and there might be a submission involved. Like, it's going to be grappling. I think Daria is going to be winning the fight when it's on the feet. All right. Underdogs galore on this card that are live. And let's move on to this next fight. Steven Nguyen taking on Jarno Ahrens.
Now, everybody, just so you know, you're not having a stroke when you hear these salaries, okay? These are going to be real salaries.
Yeah, this one's ridiculous. Like, the pricing is a little weird. You know what? DraftKings, when they were all wide, they just made them all 95, 9600. But now, when they're all tight, they're just like, we don't care. We're going to put Steve Nguyen, 9400, minus 185. Steve Nguyen, Nguyen. Fight goes to the distance, minus 140. So I don't know. I don't really understand this one. Is this like, this is the ultimate, this is a, like a game theory play. Steve Nguyen isn't somebody you'd want to play even if he was 8,300. His style of fighting is boxing. It doesn't score well. There's no takedowns really at all. Unproven. Probably not really that much better than Jarno either. I'm pretty, there he is. Not that big Marl. What's up, my man? But I don't really get it. I don't get this line. I don't get the price. But Monk, do you think this? Am I missing something? This fight doesn't look like it's going to score well, especially not for Nguyen unless he gets a knockout early.
Yeah, he's going to need that. And Jarno, you know, say what you want about him, but he's no AJ Cunningham, and that's the only guy Nguyen has looked decent against in his 1, 2, 3. Times he was on the Dana White Contender Series. That's right. He lost his first one, won his second. You know, landed almost 8.5 strikes a minute, had nothing else in the fight, no takedowns, no control time, nothing. And then he fought AJ Cunningham, who's the dude that got absolutely demolished by Ludovic Klein in like the second round. I don't remember, but yeah. Klein scored like 160,000 points in that just a few weeks ago. So I'm not impressed with that. Steven Nguyen, 9,400. That seems crazy. I am not a Jarno Ahrens fan, but like you said, from a game theory spot, normally 6,800 is not somebody I want to focus on for even for a punt. But I think Ahrens is a punt and even bordering on a little bit, whatever the level is above punt this week, because I mean, who knows what could happen if this goes to greasy decision. You know what I'm saying? If Ahrens gets the Nguyen at this salary, I'm not going to say a lock. I never say a lock, but he's got a very, very good chance of making the optimal lineup, even with like 70 points. So,
On this one, Monk, this is more live dogs than usual.
Exactly. So while I'm picking Nguyen, Ahrens is 100% a live DraftKings dog. / pump play / whatever level is above that for me. So yeah, I'll pick Nguyen. Not excited for his salary or his score in DraftKings, and Ahrens is the clear game theory play here.
Problem is, everyone's going to be on Ahrens.
That's honestly true. Are they going to actually play him though?
Why is everybody on Ahrens? What are you talking about? Was this a thing? Why?
Yeah,
why
absolutely. Everybody is on Ahrens because he's plus, what was it, plus 150, the cheapest fighter on the card? Because DraftKings, like you alluded to, DraftKings has to spread out all the salaries because it's just what they do. They don't do duplicate salaries. So if you get a whole card that is close fights, this is what happens. And you got Steve Wynn, who I'm picking him to win too. I do think he's technically better. But even if they were like 8,400, 7,800, or whatever it may be, Aaron's is the better DK play because if he wins, it's because he's got power. That's his path to victory. He got a knockdown against Sung Woo Choi. If he wins, it's because he knocked out Wynn. If Wynn wins, it's because it's a volume-based decision. What do I think is more likely to happen? I'm with the books and Wynn. What do I think is more likely to win? The DraftKings play in Aaron's. So, I mean, it's pretty much that simple. I'm not playing much of Wynn. And even though I'm picking against him, Aaron's, I'll have... I'm not going to go crazy, though, because I actually think he's going to be around 20 to 25%. I'm interested in what the ownership projections are going to be. He's going to be popular.
Yeah, I'm full fading Wynn for the most part. I don't see any reason to play somebody at 9,400 unless salaries don't matter in the end of the day. I don't really see him winning by finish. I don't see it happening early. And if he does win, a striking-based even finish in the second or third round, it's not going to score enough. So a lot of reasons not to like Wynn at 9,400. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I love Aaron's either. I think he probably could win, but there's tons of live dogs. So I like the price point at 6,800. And I think Aaron's can sneak in a decision. I think Aaron's might have, let me just pull this up here and get that going on screen. But yeah, there's just no real grappling here or anything that will cause the scoring to sort of spike. So for me, for the most part, this fight, especially if Aaron's is going to be owned, I'd just as soon stay away from it. But I definitely don't like Wynn minus 185 for 9,400 on DraftKings. That just does not stand out at all. A lot of these fights don't stand out. This, what makes this card difficult is it's really difficult to find fights that are going to score really well. Like they're all the next one too. This is a pattern.
I don't want to play anybody.
Yeah. It's like, you can't fade everything. But this next one, Miles Johns against Cody Gibson. I feel like this fight can go either way in terms of scoring, but Johns is a slight favorite, minus 140. Fight goes the distance, minus 150. Let me pull up the stats on... It's never been more important than Miles Johns. Miles Johns is supposed to be a grappler. Sometimes he does it. Sometimes he doesn't. The volume is super low. Does not score. I mean, Monk, Miles Johns, he's like your kryptonite. You can't like this guy.
Yeah, for DraftKings, I mean, his numbers are just bad for the most part. In his defense...
How dare you?
In his defense, no pun intended or pun very intended, his defensive numbers are also very good. He does not allow any points. So basically, there's no points going around in Miles John fights. When he wins in his UFC career, 71 on average. That's like, surprisingly, only the fourth lowest number on this card. Thought it would be worse, but yeah, he only gives up 85 when he loses on average as well. And he is 4-1 in his last five, but the name value here, I mean, we've got Vince Morales, we've got Anderson Dos Santos, we've got Kevin Natividad. I'm pretty sure none of those guys, I don't know, is Morales not in the UFC? I don't think any of those guys in the UFC anymore. Argueta would be the only one, and yeah, Argueta didn't look great against Johns, and Johns walked away there with a decision win that netted him just 67 points, so I am not too interested in Johns. Meanwhile, Gibson, 1-4. His strength of schedule, I mean, he's got Aljamain Sterling. That's probably the best name on there. His only win in that last four is against Johnny Bedford. He got a quick win bonus there, 126 points. I guess there's an okay upside with Gibson, but I'm just not interested in this fight, man. 8,200 and 8,000. Like, I'm picking Johns to win. I think he gets it done by decision, and I don't think he scores very well. Probably his average, 70, 75 points. And even Gibson, if you think there's upside on him, he's still the most expensive dog this week. So in a card where we've already talked about how many live dogs there are, I don't know that I'm going to go with Gibson as a live dog at 8K most expensive against Miles Johns here.
It's really pissing me off how much we agree this week, Monk. Say something stupid. Please say, like, this is, we're supposed to be, I feel very mellow this week. I guess it's just one of those cards.
Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's a good thing, Sniper.
Maybe. I agree. Miles Johns is the pick. I also think not much interest in Gibson. I've seen Gibson stuck on his back a long time. I'll play a little bit of Miles Johns because if he takes the wrestling route, he could score pretty decent here. He can do it. He just doesn't do it consistently. And Gibson, I've seen him pinned down for entire fights. So give me, you know, that big of a gap, a hole, and a guy in Miles Johnson who can exploit it. He seems like the clear pick. 8,200 is the cheapest favorite. I like me some Miles Johns, but it's not something I'm going to get super excited about.
All right, let's get more excited about a fight. And this next one is a fight, I think, to get a little more excited for in terms of scoring, in terms of just the action that we might see in the fight. And that is Ricardo Ramos taking on Julian Erosa. Juicy.
And it's not become, it's not because of Ricardo Ramos.
No, but Juicy is a fun fighter to watch. He is a finisher. He gets finished. He is a finish-y, which I like even more than a finisher. I like a finish-y.
I like being finished.
Yes. I don't even know. I'm not going there. So under 2.5 rounds, minus 175. This is a fight I'm excited for. Both guys grapple. Both guys have a little bit of wrestling in their repertoire, which means their scoring can come from everywhere. Erosa landing 6 strikes per minute. Ramos, solid with the takedowns and the top game. I think that's probably how this one goes. But Monk, I would imagine that both of these guys are good producers on DraftKings.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, Erosa definitely. Anytime Julian Erosa fights Juicy J, you got to get him or his opponent in your lineups because, as you alluded to, there are a ton of points flying around. I mean, I think all but one of his fights are in the featherweight division in the UFC, and Erosa is averaging 104.6 when he wins, and his opponents are averaging 105.58 when he loses. Yeah. So big you got to play. Yeah, exactly. You got to play both sides. I actually like Ricardo Ramos. I mean, he's hard to root for. He's hard to be a fan of, especially lately. This fight basically comes down to Ricardo's fight IQ against Julian Erosa's chin or lack thereof. Ramos does have 2 KO wins. Both are spinning back elbows, which is lucky always fun to see.
He was losing those fights.
Yeah,
Monk.
Well, one was in the very first minute or so. Was it Chavez? Yeah, Chavez. Chavez fight was in like a minute and a half or something like that. His takedown numbers are a bit inflated because he landed 8 against Bill Algeo, but outside of that, he's only landed 3 in his last 4 fights, if you don't count that Algeo one. His scores are okay. His salary is not something that excites me, $8,900, but he is fighting Julian Erosa, who you have to play and play his opponent. So I'll have a fair shake on both sides here. Honestly, man, I don't know who to pick. I can honestly see Julian Erosa taking this to a decision, or I can see Ramos making a mistake and getting gillied or darsed, or Ramos just catching Erosa and this fight is over. So I like both sides. Since we're doing the show, I'll technically take Ricardo Ramos to win. I'll probably regret that, but I'm playing both sides. And this is another case of like 9K and 7,200. I think it was the Lima and Severino fight. I'm very interested in Erosa just because of the salary, knowing that he's probably going to get KO'd. So give me both sides. This is a good one to target.
I've spent most of Julian Erosa's career shitting on him on these podcasts.
Same.
And this is the kind of bullshit fucking fight he finds a way to win. This is just, I've watched him long enough. This is the kind of fight this fucker finds a way to win. And I'm not going to be caught this time. I'm going to take Julian Erosa. It's kind of that pressure and activity. Ramos, I don't think he's a great grappler. He's serviceable. He's good enough. I think Erosa can keep it up. I think Ramos is, again, it's one of those in a phone booth, and it just, that's the kind of fight that seems to suit Erosa, but it's also one we've seen him get caught plenty of times too. It's just, he's used to that pressure and activity. I think he's going to get Ramos moving backwards. I'm definitely not going to let Erosa's chin beat me. This is probably right that I'm going to be overweight to both guys on, and just Erosa is the kind of dog at 7,300 who could break the slate. And I've never been that high on Ricardo Ramos. Like you mentioned, there was one of those 2 knockouts. He was losing that fight.
He was a minus 450 favorite in that fight. I don't forget when you're a minus like massive favorite. It might've been against, I don't remember who it came against. It was way back in the day. It could have been like an Ayman Zahabi, maybe?
He's got losses to
Yeah, here it is. Yeah, it was Ayman Zahabi. And actually, in fairness, Ayman Zahabi, we've learned, is a little less bad than maybe we thought.
Right, so, but he's got losses to Lerone Murphy, who's okay. And who was the last fight? Scroll back up, because it's escaping me at the moment.
He took a loss to Charles Jourdain, which was a tough one. This is the loss that you're like, huh, really?
So yeah, this is when he puts himself in a ghillie and then taps immediately. Yeah.
This is Julie and Juicy J especially. This is a GPP special fight. Lean towards a dog.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Listen, Ricardo Ramos, exactly that. He lost to Charles Jourdain. You don't do that if you're good, right? That's the
Don't do that. No,
you don't. So like, what it means is he can't be trusted. He can never be trusted. Am I betting on Ramos here? No. But do I think he's a better fighter than Juicy? Yes. Do I think he can knock out Julian with his spinning back elbow? Yeah, I think he could use that exact move that's worked for him a couple times. Again, here against the chinny fighter in Erosa, but it's hard to count on people just getting knocked out. So, I think... What you guys said, I prefer Ramos. I'm going to play him, but you got to have some Erosa, and I would not bet this fight. Actually, if I would bet it, the bet would be fight probably ends inside the distance. I haven't looked at the I don't remember what the odds were, but that would be where I would lean on a fight like that, that it just is a finish. All right, let's move on. I see the order on Fight Odds is different than the order on Tapology. That's always going to mess me up, but we'll go with it. All right, next up we've got Trey Ogden taking on Kurt Holleball in another really weirdly close fight. Every fight is close.
I hate this card. This fight is the definition of why I hate this fucking card. Sorry, go ahead.
This one's close, man. Minus 150 on Holleball. Minus 150 on Ogden. Comeback on Holleball is plus 135. Fight goes the distance, plus 135. This is an important one to pull up some stats, as I believe there are some relevant takedown statistics here. Not super relevant, but...
No, there is, right there.
Takedown defense ain't the best for Holleball.
Yep, that's it. That's the fight.
Yeah, I mean, and Ogden does want to go for a takedown, so there you have it. There you have it. Can Ogden take Holleball down and hold him down for most of the fight, Monk?
I wanted to play Trey Ogden. Sorry, I thought I was muted. I wanted to play Trey Ogden. Not so bad, but kind of bad. I just don't know, man. I mean, I agree. That is the fight. Holleball with his 50% takedown defense. But Ogden, he shot 30 takedowns, only landed 5 of them. Looked that, good.
Look, that was look, against... maybe a more resistant.
Well, sure. He hasn't fought like any like grapplers at all. I mean, Jordan Levitt a little bit is one. Daniel Zellhuber, not at all. And he did land one there, but only controlled him for 4% of the time. And then Ignacio Bahamondes. I mean, just a bunch of very low volume type of performances here. He looked good against Zellhuber, like I said, 6,800, and he won. He only scored 64 points in that win. I don't think that even made him optimal at that point. And Nicholas Mata, he got robbed of what could have been a 100-point score there. He was really close if you add in the bonus. 4.5 strikes a minute is decent. 3 takedowns landed and some decent control time for the first time in his UFC career at 34%. So that's more of what I'm looking for from Trey Ogden, and that's what I'm hoping to see against Kurt Holleball, who is 1-4 but has fought good guys in Barcelos, Burgos, and Moises. Beat Hubbard most recently in his comeback to the UFC. Scored 100 points in that after he got a sub, but that takedown defense is what worries me here. The scores for Ogden is what worries me on the other side. So this is just a blah fight. Ogden should score well. He probably won't. I guess I'm just kind of middling on him. I'm picking him to win, Ogden. I'll play a little bit of Holleball. This is just a blah average fight for me, I think. Somebody, unless one of you can talk me into a side.
Yeah, unfortunately, you want to know why I hate this fucking card? This is why. Because Trey Ogden somehow has become one of my most confident dog picks from the card. Like what?
Like
I like Trey Ogden. It seems really straightforward to me, in that Trey Ogden, He looked good against Nicholas Mata. The guys he couldn't grapple or out-grapple, he had a split decision against Jordan Levitt. What was it? And Inácio Bahamondes is long, tall problem in that division.
Yeah, Nacho's no joke.
And I got Kurt Hollibaugh, who can't stay off his fucking back. And if Ogden tries to... Ogden's going to be outmatched in the feet. I don't think he's going to try to strike with him. I think he's going to get top position, secure it, and put up a decent score. Like we saw it last time out, he's active on top. I am relatively sure he can get the takedowns, and there's not a ton of high upside fights in this card. There's not other all-in fights, and here's fucking Trey Ogden sitting at 8,500. I'm pissed about it, but I really like him for this DraftKings slate. I'm not pleased.
Yeah, because for me, when I was constructing a couple lineups, the mid-range is always where I'm last this week, putting guys in last in the mid-range, and Trey Ogden's just fucking sitting there.
Yep.
I don't know. I'll make an argument on the other side of this one, Sniper, to help you at least be so insanely on Ogden here. I think we got to cut Hollibaugh some slack on the takedown defense number. And the only reason why is because the guys who are taking him down, like, are crazy grapplers. Pat Healy. That's all he's crazy grappler, right? That's what he's there to do.
Steven Seiler. That's
Seiler. I'm not super impressed by, but Ronnie Barcelos. Okay, I mean, nothing wrong with that. Thiago Moise. Okay, there's nothing wrong with getting taken down by Thiago. Austin Hubbard took you down twice. That's not so good.
What weight class are we fighting at here?
And controlled him for a whole round, Austin Hubbard.
That's not so good. That's right. Yeah,
Ryan Barcelos is a fucking midget taking him. Like, Kurt Hollibaugh is way bigger. I have
this at lightweight, yeah.
This is at 155, this fight. So I was just playing devil's advocate. Like, I don't know.
That didn't help. God damn it.
I was trying to do a little devil's advocacy here. Didn't help. I tried.
Shit.
I mean,
God, when Kurt Hollibaugh knocks him out in 30 seconds, I'm
just and I know that this fight.
Yep.
This slate is really cool for DraftKings. I like it because it's a lot of live dogs. Like you said, this fight is just a headache.
Big Marley nailed it before. You're going to leave a lot of salary. Like, salary almost doesn't matter based on how many live dogs there are in this. You just like almost have to turn it off and just not pay attention to it, which is not for me. I will tell you, for my game, that is not good for my game. I'm not comfortable leaving. I don't enjoy leaving lots of salary on the table.
Yeah, it's hard.
I like when my entire strategy for the card, which two turds do I need to pick in order to get all these lock button Hundy plus scores over 9K in my lineup. And instead, that is just not how this one is shaping up. So there are more fade fights coming. So many fade fights. I don't know if you can keep fading them. But this next one, I don't think is a fade fight, guys.
What do we got? What's next?
Luis Pajuelo.
Yeah, this is not a fade.
Taking on Fernando Padilla, with Padilla coming in as a -170 favorite. Pajuelo come back at +145. Fight inside the distance, a solid -190. So we do get a fight here that looks like it can end with some violence. Padilla inside the distance, +140. Pajuelo, +225. So, Padilla, pretty good shot here of not just winning, but winning inside the distance. Monk, tell us about the styles of these two guys.
Well, Padilla, I was supremely impressed with in his first in his debut fight. Yes, it was against Julian Erosa, but he did exactly what he was supposed to come out and do against Erosa, especially as a debutant. Round one KO, 108 points, boom, put himself on the optimal lineup right there. Then did the exact opposite against Kyle Nelson, landed less than half of the volume. Obviously, this one went all 15 instead of just a minute and a half, so you expect a little bit less. But 4.8 strikes a minute, and that was all he did. That was it. So lost that I guess I was going to say split, but unanimous decision. Very close fight on paper to Kyle Nelson. Luis Pajuelo got the first round KO. Dana White Contender Series fight against Robbie Ring. 9 strikes per minute. Again, didn't even hit the 4-minute mark. Got hit with 5 strikes a minute and was controlled for 22% of that fight. Taken down once, should be noted there. But Padilla is not a guy that's really, you know, he's a striker. He's not going to go for takedowns unless, unless for some reason that's what he's been training this camp. I highly doubt it. But I like Padilla here. I like his salary at 8,700. At this point, what did you say? Minus 160?
He is
65.
Padilla is plus 140 to win inside the distance.
Okay. Well, I know Rose is like the biggest favorite and she's only like minus 215. So,
He's a minus 170 favorite, but plus 140 inside the distance.
Oh yeah. So, yeah. I mean, there's a chance that, you know, so Vegas thinks that he's going to finish this fight against the newcomer Luis here, which I probably agree with. I like Padilla round two KO. And I think he has the potential to score. Okay. I'd love to hear what you guys think about Luis here, because as you know, I'm a stat guy. I don't have a ton of stats outside of that Dana White Contender Series fight. So my pick's Padilla. I like him at 8,700. And yeah, top end of a really shitty mid-range this week. So I like him.
Yeah, I like Padilla too. Papoyo is fine. But again, coming out of the Peru regional scene, I don't think it's a super strong regional scene. Two guys who have power, I think it's actually relatively, I mean, I think it's a volatile fight. Just the way Padilla fights, I think he's going to be a little more direct, a little more power. Kind of like him, just like him overall. I don't, this is one to get both sides of because of the minus 190 number we mentioned, but I am on the, and I have enough dogs where I like the favorites a little better. I just saw him blast Julian Arosa. I'm waiting on Julian Arosa this week, so let's keep the good things rolling for Padilla. Like I said, it is a volatile fight, though. I wouldn't touch this one in cash games.
Padilla also, last thing, is a striker. He's going to have a 7-inch reach advantage if UFC stats is to be believed here. So
yeah, who knows? I actually stopped I can't even look at that shit anymore.
The fakeness of it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think either guy is really established as being very good. Again, it's another fight like a lot of these others. Both guys are strikers. Padilla does seem like he might be. I mean, he has real wins. Like Padilla has some like legitimate wins. Kind of. Like the Arosa is kind of a legit win, but also let's not forget that Arosa has no chin. And when you knock him out, like it doesn't prove that you're that great. It just means you're able to touch his chin. So I don't know. I think this is a good fight to target. I don't think it's a all-in fight by any stretch, even with the high inside the distance prop. I don't think it's a lock button to go that way, but more importantly, I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of grappling. So it's going to take a lot of volume and a fast finish for one of these guys to emerge. I tend to think that actually Pajuelo is the better DraftKings play for the same reason that all the other underdogs are, because when you get these fights that where neither guy looks like they're going to score that well, I'll take the underdog if they win as a better DraftKings play, but we need to actually play some favorites too. So that's going to be challenging. We're going to have to find those favorites on this card. And, you know, it is not the easiest one. And again, another fight coming up right now. I need all-in fights, Sniper. I hope there's some all-in fights coming up at the top of this card, because I'm getting frustrated. Yeah. And this next one is such a fucking turd that I don't even want to talk about. Like, this is not a fight that's going to produce points. Actually, I'm not going to say that strongly. I'm going to say it minimally. I don't think this is another one that's going to score well. Yusuf Zalal, Billy Quarantillo.
Disagree.
I don't know. I don't see it. I like Billy Q, but like Zalal is such a boring fighter. This thing is minus 120 for Billy Quarantillo. That number has moved, right? Quarantillo started off as a massive favorite. And, moved quick, fine. And then it was at minus 185. And then it was a minus 180. And now it's minus 150. All the monies are coming in.
It's the kind of line that makes me think something's up with Billy Q.
Yusuf Zalal is getting all the cream right now. And all right, let me talk about Yusuf Zalal. This guy was not very good in his first run in the UFC. Okay. So my initial thought was, why is Billy Quarantillo not like a massive favorite here? And then a little bit of sniffing around Yusuf Zalal. He was a lot younger. You know, he's got some experience added. I guess his first run in the UFC was in 2021. It's been a few years. Maybe he's a little better, but he's back in the UFC. And I got to tell you something, guys. I was not impressed by Yusuf Zalal's initial run in the UFC. I didn't think he was very good. So I don't know. To me, Billy Quarantillo is a much better fighter than Yusuf Zalal. I don't really understand what's going on with the line movement. My first instinct was to bet Billy Q. As soon as I saw this fight, I did bet him. I bet him at worse odds than it is now. That's why I know it's been moving. I'm like, ah, shit. I paid too much. So I don't know. I don't know. I like Billy Q, but what do you guys think on this one here? Am I seeing it wrong? Like, I'm just not a big Yusuf Zalal fan from his original run in the UFC anyway. I'm not sure if he's leveled up that much. I'm not seeing great opponents, but he's getting wins in the Sparta and SCL leagues.
Yeah, he is coming off the three in a row, three MMA KO TKOs in the first round. So that's probably why we're seeing them. Normally, I'm kind of excited for Billy Q fights because either him, this is kind of a Julian Erosa situation. Oh, there's a cat on screen.
Come on.
Look at it.
Stubborn.
It's kind of a Julian Erosa
for Billy Quarantillo.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably appropriate. A lot of points in Billy Q fights, whether he's scoring 141, 125, outside of the last one, Damon Jackson, where he only put up 87. And when he's losing, Burgos, I mean, scored 890 points without the bonus. So that's 120. Barbosa put up, 108 with the bonus. So lots of points in Billy Q fights, that's for sure. While I do agree with you, Zalal was, looking live, the Zalal run was not great. I mean, he beats Peter Barrett, who cares? Draws against Damone Blackshear, in which a fight on paper, the stats favor him, could have won that one. But looking back at his three losses, they're not as bad. I mean, Ilya Topuria is the freaking champ. He went all three with Topuria in the year 2020 and scored 31 points. I mean, that's okay, right? Sungwoo Choi is not the best opponent, but that was an extremely close fight on paper. And then Sean Woodson, another very close fight on paper, but the stats favor Zalal. He outstruck him. He landed two takedowns and controlled 42% of that fight. So a little revisionist history might make Zalal look a little bit better. I don't know. 86-76. I am going to play a little bit of Billy Q just because when he wins, he generally scores well outside of the Jackson fight. But I am going to play more Zalal than I was thinking of, just because if Zalal did in fact level up somehow, then Billy Q, like I said, gives up a shitload of points, and Zalal could be a very low owned, all of a sudden, decently scoring fighter at 7,600. So I don't know. I'm kind of talking myself into both sides. I'm picking Billy Q, but I'll have more Zalal rostered than I originally thought, and a decent amount of Q. But like you said, not an all-in fight.
JP, not impressed by the arm triangle finish over the 0-0.
Yeah, there we go. So
in the most recent fight.
It was two knockouts and then a sub. My bad.
I'm with JP here. Billy Q can score. Billy Q fights are DraftKings monies. Mm-hmm. He pushes a crazy, crazy pace. And I think Zalal will be there with him. I think it's a fun fight. Billy Q makes this not an all-in fight, but probably top three fight on the card in terms of exposure, quite honestly. Because of the pace that Billy Q pushes.
Look at the garbage that Zalal puts out. Two and under three strikes per minute.
If he doesn't keep up, Billy Q's going to force it. Either that number is going to go up for Zalal, or Billy Q's going to steamroll him and put up a big number. I am on the Billy Q side. And now that you looked at, I did not watch rewatch the Topuria fight. I rewatched Zalal's most recent fights. That's why that number's moved. That's got to be why. That's the only explanation I could think of, other than something's up
with Topuria. Like, people just paid attention. Or like, oh, wait, right. he hung in there with Ilya. Yeah, right. Listen, that was also early in Ilya Topuria's UFC career. And it was one of Ilya. I don't know if that matters that much, but like, Topuria, actually, he was pretty awesome even then.
So I'm on the Billy Q side. Yeah. I think the volume is there. The scoring is there. I think Zalal was playable too, though, just because Billy Q, like Erosa forces scores. Billy Q forces scores. And on this card, sign me up for both sides, but I do lean with the favorite in this one.
Yeah, I like Billy Q as well, but I will tell you that had I had it to do again with all of this crazy line movement, at very least I would have waited. to put that Billy Q bet.
If I could do it again, I wouldn't have taken the shittier line.
Yeah, if I could have that one back, I would like it back. All right, I think we got another interesting fight coming up here. We're coming towards the premier fights on this card, and we've got Cameron Super Simon taking on Peyton Talbot. Talbot minus 140 as the favorite in this one, with Simon plus 120. Fight goes the distance, minus 165. So another fight predicted to go to decision. Don't love that. Monk, anything we need to know about these guys stylistically, Talbot and Simon, that might lead to some scoring, that secret scoring that I'm not anticipating at the moment?
Well, Simon's looked good as far as scoring goes. He's fought absolutely nobody. Steven Koslow, Manny Martinez, and Terrence Mitchell put up well over 100 points in all three of those. In fact, made optimal. I don't even know. I don't have that up. Made him at least one of them, I think. Lost to Christian Rodriguez. Didn't look great in that one. Still landed about 5 strikes a minute, but got taken down 3 times and ended up with just 34 points.
C-Rod, that aged well.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Especially in that one judge's eyes. I don't know what, I mean, I hear a lot of people excited about Peyton Talbot, and sure, like, I can buy it, but I just didn't see it, man. He's
got the O'Malley hair. That's what it is. He looks like O'Malley.
Yeah, minus 900 against Nick Aguirre, dude. This should be a round one finish. He subbed him in the 11th minute and ended up with 68 DraftKings points, 2.5 strikes a minute, no takedowns, and had 31% control time, but Nick Aguirre controlled him for 52.5% of that fight, 2 takedowns. Very unimpressive for me as far as that goes. I mean, that's a shit score, 68 in a win. Give me a break. So I don't know, man. The only thing saving me here on Talbot's side is the salary and the fact that I think he does still have upside. I'm not gonna just throw his whole potential in the garbage can because of a shitty performance against Nick Aguirre. But I'm going to have to see it first. And he's now in that category. I got to see it from Talbot. You're going to have to show me 110-point score. And say what you want about Cameron Simon. He hasn't fought anybody, but he hung in there with C-Rod. And I think he's an okay prospect, man. He's getting a lot of hate because, South African, trains with Drickus, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't be surprised if he won this fight or at least scored okay for a dog. So I'll be pretty lukewarm to this one. And that might be a hot take on it. I'm not sure. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say.
Why stop agreeing with me? God damn it.
Didn't even read your notes yet.
great fight to watch in terms of prospect. I'm going to be entertained by this fight.
Yes.
Shit fight for DraftKings.
Yeah.
If it scores big, I'm in trouble. This should be a lot of striking, no grappling, very favored to go to decision. Peyton Talbert, I think, has got that, for whatever reason, like I said, the Sean O'Malley vibe. I don't see it. I think Simon is being underrated based on, the Christian Rodriguez loss. Christian Rodriguez is a weight bully for that division.
Yep.
Apparently it's got a horseshoe up his ass, but we won't get into that. I think this is Simon's taken his prospect L, and now I think it's Talbot's turn. So I think, for just like Monk said, I think Simon's just a little bit better. Regardless, though, I'm just, don't be an early finish and this fight won't beat me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't look great from a scoring point of view. I'm on the Talbot side a little bit. I'm a believer that the South African are not as good. The South African fighters. The Bayor, as he's known in South Africa.
Drikus is going to show up at your door.
Bayor. Both of them. The Bayor.
Drikus is going to show
up. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm against the Bayor. No, kidding. I don't care about the Bayor. But no, I don't think that's the greatest country to birth amazing UFC fighters, and the fact that even one, the statistical possibility of a second good fighter coming out of South Africa, just it's too much for my mind to handle.
That's your logic.
I don't accept it. I cannot accept it. And Talbot's, he can stop a takedown. I think he's going to stand in there and bang. So yeah, I'm going to take the Talbot side of this one, and I like it for DraftKings. And by the way, he's one of the cheapest, minus 140. Like, I got to pay 9.5K on this card for, like, minus 150. I might as well take a cheaper minus 140. Like, at least I can have a favored fighter for under 8.5K. Is it under 8.5? How much, what is the price on this guy? Yeah, 8.3K. I mean, like minus 140, 8.3. I've got to pay 9K for a minus 140. Some other fighters. So this feels like a bargain. I like it. I'm going for Talbot in that fight. All right. We are coming to the name brand fighters, kind of.
Thank fucking Christ.
Name brand, Edmund Shahbazyan. Another
fighter people love to shit on for reasons I don't totally get.
Cody from the Dogger Pass podcast would call Edmund Shahbazyan an apple pie shitter. This guy disappoints as a heavy favorite frequently. Very dangerous favorite. But we got Edmund Shahbazyan taking on AJ Dobson. Shabazian's a minus 205 favorite for this one. Comeback on Dobson, plus 175. Fight ends inside the distance, a solid minus 165. Finally, slightly better than 50% odds of a fight ending inside the distance. Let's go. Let's see. Let's look at the individual numbers. Shahbazyan inside the distance, solid, plus 105. Sniper, you're going to like that, Monk. Dobson inside the distance, plus 375, a little less good. So, unless my mind is deceiving me here, Monk, I believe that Edmund, yeah, second best. I mean, he's minus 205. Rose is minus 210, depending on where you look. So, Edmund's kind of the second best, biggest favorite on this card. Can we trust him to put up that big score? We got some big scores out of him early in his career.
I trust that he has potential to it. And I'm looking at the lines. Whoops, he did shit in the apple pie against Brunson. But other than that, he has not lost as a favorite. He lost to Fluffy Hernandez. He was plus 185. Nasruddin, he was plus 105. Jack Hermanson, he was plus 117. So it's not too bad. Yeah, close. But people, if you're wiki capping this and you see that he's 1-4 in his last five, and you're not super young. That's exactly, yeah. But that's why people aren't going to play him. I'm on the Shahbazyan side.
And by the way, in fairness to Edmund, all good fighters. Like the Brunson loss was unforgivable.
He got pushed way great too hard, way too quick.
At him. Yeah. It's because of who his striking coach was, and it was Edmund. What's his name? And or whatever that dude's Ronda's old coach.
Edmund, whatever.
Yeah, it's Brunson, it's Hermanson, it's Imovov, and it's Fluffy Hernandez. Outside of Brunson, all those dudes are fighting at the top of the card, basically. Fluffy's a fucking beast. And
absolutely forgivable losses.
Yep. And Shahbazyan did exactly what he was supposed to do against Dalcha, round two KO. Score okay, 94 at 9,400. That's not ideal. But here he is a little cheaper at 91. And Dobson, I mean, less than impressive. Lost to Malkoon, gave up a shitload of takedowns, as you would expect. Lost to Armin Petrosian. In a very close fight, and then beat Tafan and Chukwi, but only scored 81 points, super low volume, a couple of takedowns and a round's worth of control time. Shahbazyan, I think, has the skills. Super young, as Sniper said. He's still getting better, improving between every fight. I'm ignoring the 1-4. I will be rostering him in GPPs. I could even see myself rostering him in cash. I think he gets it done here, and I think he can finish Dobson. I think he kind of not has to, but I think he should put on a good performance. He needs a good performance here to show all these haters that he's not, in fact, just another scrub. So I like Shahbazyan. I don't mind the salary either.
Yeah, I like I said, I think Shahbazyan got pushed way too hard, way too quick. AJ Dobson is not him. He's just not one of those guys that we referenced. I think Shahbazyan's in a good spot. Now they're building him correctly. I think he bounced back from those losses pretty well. Maybe at some point the durability from the ass kickings he took a little young in his career will come back to get him. I think Shahbazyan's a sneaky good play. I had way too many dogs to really be considering a ton of AJ Dobson. Shahbazyan's the move in this fight for me, pretty clearly.
Shahbazyan priced at 9,100. Again, on a card that we've all discussed, has lots of underdogs that are live all over the place. Salaries don't matter that much. When Shahbazyan has won, the scores have generally been really good. The Dalcha fight aside, the three previous wins were 98 to 100 points. All of that
seems not bad either.
What's that?
94 isn't bad.
Yeah, no. Every time he's won, it's been a pretty good score. So impressed by that. Remember that first fight against the dentist where he got 8 takedowns? And then after that, I thought Edmund Shahbazi was going to be this takedown lunatic. He really never goes for takedowns at all, or he stopped. For the most part, he just didn't do it. He stops doing it. I don't expect him necessarily to do it here either. I think it's probably going to have a striking battle. And it probably ends with Shahbazi knocking out Dobson. That's the most likely outcome. But he is a disappointment machine. He did lose to Derek Brunson, and not in peak Derek Brunson, but rather in the middle of Derek Brunson being not that good, although not like the most horrific version of him, but still not a great version of him that, you know, a guy who was losing to everybody else. So he will disappoint as a favorite. He's not super trustworthy. Do you know, did he get rid of Ronda's head coach? Does he have a new team, or is he still?
I think he did.
Yeah, he's at.
He did before his last fight.
I don't know why.
He has a real MMA team training him now.
Hang on, now I have to confirm.
Throwing him back in against.
Instinct.
Oh, he says Extreme Couture, which means he's probably just hanging out. He's probably just hanging out in Vegas.
Yeah, Extreme Couture.
You know what? If you know, Extreme Couture, they'll prep you.
He's training with Roman. Let's go.
Yeah, they'll get you ready. They'll get you ready for a fight. They'll be strategy.
And they'll troll other fighters' wives. What?
On a card, I'm ignoring that statement. And I'm gonna say that on a card without anybody to pay up for, although this next guy is fun to pay up for too, and this next fight is fun, but without that many of those spots. I can't go all in. Normally, Monk, I would have gone all in. That's what I was meaning before. This is the kind of fight like Edmund, 8 takedowns in one fight one time. This was the kind of spot where you think, like, let me lock button somebody. I don't think you can lock button even Edmund on this card, because if he doesn't go for takedowns and it's just striking, it could just end up being, even if he gets a finish in the third round, you know, not that great of a score. Although his history does say he scores well when he wins. All right. This is a fight, not necessarily that I'm excited to watch, but I kind of probably should score well. I feel like it should score well.
And absolutely.
Like, this should score well. Carl Williams versus Justin Taffa. Carl Williams minus 180 favorite. Comeback on Taffa plus 155. I love Carl Williams here. I like guys who just...
He's a madman.
What's that?
Because he's a madman.
Yeah, he does what you want. Especially against Justin Taffa, but like a heavyweight averaging 4 takedowns per 15. Why does it say Justin Taffa's takedown defense is 100%? What is happening?
Because only 2 people have attempted takedowns against him. One was Harry Hunsucker.
Oh,
both failed. So now it says he has 100. He's 0-2.
So we don't know. What if he's good? And we don't even know.
No, I would be.
Stunned. You don't know. Prove it. You don't know. But he's probably terrible. But
so when he pulls out, who's is there a Jeffrey Taffa? Is there a Jordan Taffa that can step in?
They just Mark Hunt. They'll throw him in there. They all look the same. Carl Williams, a takedown machine, Monk, against the 100% takedown defense of Justin Taffa.
Yeah, I think JP just nailed it with this last comment. Outside of a winging right hand from Taffa that just deads Carl Williams in the first round, which for the record is why you have to have some Taffa in your lineup. Of course, why wouldn't you put, you know, the round one merchant in your lineup and Justin Taffa? Outside of that happening, Carl Williams, I mean, there's going to be probably 2 takedowns in this fight because Carl Williams will get a second round finish, and that's how I kind of see it going. If he gets a takedown, how is Taffa getting up? No. Does the Kool-Aid man get up off his back, you know, without assistance? Highly unlikely. So
Let me ask you a question. This is really important. Do you think that Taffa, if he was laying on his back, could get up off the ground to a standing position?
No.
Without using his hand to push himself up?
Let's see. He'd have to roll over, and he'd have to probably get on his knees. And he'd probably end up falling on his head. I'd say slim to none.
You're saying no to that.
Slim to none. Yeah.
He's an elite athlete. You're saying he can't even get up. JP is very confident that Tafa.
I'm with JP again. Just,
you're saying he cannot even get up on assisted sniper. Do you agree with this?
Not unassisted without you. You said without using
without his hand. The hand. Yeah. You should be able to, if you're an athlete.
I think you probably
without pushing down with your hand. I saw a police video of a female police officer, and she was so big and pudgy. She pulls out her gun. The car was on an incline. She pulls out the weapon. She's rolling down the hill. Can't get back. She shoots everybody. Just shots fired all over the place as she's just trying to get back up off the ground. And the whole point was she could not get up without putting the gun.
She shoots everybody.
I was like, who's the way she's firing off shots because she's just on the ground.
America. When you have that, that's one argument. But when you have Carl Williams on top of you, it's definitely. Yeah,
let's get back on track here.
Yeah, Williams on him, he's not getting up.
Yeah, I'm on Williams here. I think he has the potential to put up a big score. He's going to land a lot of ground and pound, but probably non-significant strikes, which just as I've talked about in several weeks before this, just add up and add up and add up. So yeah, I like Williams. I'm going to be playing a lot of Williams at 9,300, much more value in my opinion than one Steven Wynn, who's $100 more. And Tafa, I'm going to play some of because round one finish upside. There you go.
Is this our all-in fight? Is this it? Is this one where it's like, I'll do 80-20?
The next one.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
The main event is lock button as well. I mean, listen, I don't even
Talk about that.
100% exposure for me on the main event. Because give me five rounds on this card. Women? Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I'm doing that. Okay. I'm doing that. I'm all in on the main. 100%.
I get you here. And the reason you have to play some Tafa is because Carl Williams, I don't think he's super smart. And I think, remember, he's the one who's like, I'm going to stand with Chase Sherman. Why?
He almost lost to Chase Sherman.
I make a fun fight. If he decides to fucking stand with Tafa,
he's not doing that.
No mistake, sir. Tafa will knock you out and you won't be able to get up. Like, he should just wrestle, win, fine, move on. But Tafa's live because Williams is fun. I enjoy it. But in terms of capping it, I have to take that into consideration.
Right.
It almost takes him out of cash game consideration for me because I don't know how much I trust him.
I mean, he's the biggest favorite on the card. Like, he's
But this card is hot ass.
One of the bigger. Yeah, he's one of the bigger favorites anyway.
So give me Carl Williams, but it's an all-in fight, so I'll have both.
Carl Williams inside the distance, plus 155. Tafa inside the distance, plus 200. Yeah, I like Carl. I like big Carl here. I think this is an all-in fight. I don't think he's going to do the chip. I didn't learn my lesson. I was all in on Carl Williams against Chase Sherman. Like, I had 90% that day. Okay, and I'm just going to go back and pull up the score. It was a terrible
70.
And it ruined the card. That was it. It was like, all right, wish I didn't do that. And that was the end. But if you're going to play that style, that's the style I like to play, where you got to kind of lock button a couple spots. You're right. Who the hell was expecting Carl Williams to not get takedowns against Chase Sherman? Chase Sherman was known for having no takedown defense. Is he gonna stand and bang with Justin Tafa, who is basically a guy who will knock you the fuck out if you stand and bang with him? Like, that's what he does. They don't even train grappling over in New Zealand. They're just fucking around. They're laughing. They're drinking shoeys with Ty Tuivasa.
Ty's from Australia.
What's that?
Ty's Australian.
They're all the same.
I just softballed that in for you. I knew you were going to say that.
It's all the same shit, bro. They all do that dance thingy, the haka.
Australians do the haka, do they?
They do the haka. Don't sass me right now. They do the haka, bro. They're out there fucking awesome. I love that haka. Scary, man. Like warriors and shit. These are badass people. Wait, you're telling me what? It's New Zealand is different than Australia?
Yeah, that is that would be what I was telling you.
They are different.
It's literally the same shit.
They are
there's no difference.
Entirely different countries.
Do both countries have kangaroos? Does any other place have a kangaroo? No. But those two places do have kangaroos. But you want to tell me they're different? Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was going to tell you.
No, it's not. There's places that have kangaroos on this earth, and there are places that don't have them, and that's it.
I think I've pretty much given up talking to you. Let's just go to the main event, please.
Fine. Rose Namajunas taking on Amanda Ribas. Rose, Thug Rose, minus 210. I can't. This is a really interesting main event for any card, but I guess it's okay for this card. But Rose is minus 210. Ribas plus 180. Five round fight. Under four. Fight ends inside the distance, minus 160. So let's take a look at the statistics, Monk. Five round fight, all in. Got to have a piece of both sides. Love both sides of this. You know, Rose probably, I would say, more likely to get a finish. And Ribas, to me, if she's winning, it's probably by decision. But how do you see it going down?
Yeah, the only fight I'm really interested in as far as historically for Namajunas is the Manon Fiorot fight. Obviously, it's her only other fight at women's flyweight, where she was at strawweight her entire career. And that was an extreme, like the closest possible fight you could have on paper between two people. And I was very impressed with that because Fioro, up until that point, and maybe even still known as one of the premier strikers in the flyweight division. And Rose actually outlanded her by two strikes. She ended up with four strikes a minute, got hit with less than that. There was no takedowns, hardly any control time to speak of. But she really hung in there in a fight where I was kind of wrote her off when I obviously shouldn't have. So if she lands four strikes a minute times 25 minutes, guys, I'm not that good at math, but I think that's 100 points without the bonus. So I'm not saying that's exactly what's going to happen, but I'm saying that's a thing that could happen over 25 minutes. Ribas loves to get hit. She's given up 4.2 strikes a minute to Caitlin Sermonara. She gave up 9.3 strikes a minute to Macy Barber in her fights there. And her offensive scoring is up and down. 78 against Verna, 115 against Araujo, and 92 against Pinheiro. So I don't know what to think there, but doesn't matter. Her salary is cheap enough. It takes the thinking out of it. I'm going to play both sides of this one. I think it does go to decision. I think Rose can score well in a win. And I think Ribas could potentially score okay in a win at her salary as well. And I'm interested to see what you guys think about a possible stack for the main event here, if in fact it does go to decision. But yeah, I'll take Namajunas at 9,200. Widest line on the whole card at, I think, minus 215. So it's a pretty insane week this week, guys.
It is bananas. Sniper, what do you think here?
I'm definitely down for stack this up in cash games. No yeah, problem. Cash games, like, sure. Cash game stack, 1,000%. I think Rose is a little bit better everywhere. The problem is at least stylistically, I think Ribas is going to end up backing up, circling. Rose is going to touch her up. I think she might try and shoot. That's my worry in terms of the Rose pick. I am picking Rose, is that if Ribas can get on top, I think she can do some damage, and she's bigger and stronger than, you know, Rose's takedown defense was it's only 60%. She's fought it at strawweight. This is a flyweight fight. Ribas, I would imagine, I mean, Rose is taller, but I think Ribas is probably physically stronger. I just think Rose is the better technical striker. I think she can keep it on the feet. That's the part I'm a little doubtful on, and that's Ribas' path to victory. But a Rose win, while it's five rounds of striking, I don't know how busy she's going to have to be. She might. I had that little bit of hesitation, and I like the idea of I think this fight's going to get overowned, and it's a women's MMA fight that typically don't score great. I'm not on the all inside. That's, you know, I'm not saying I'll probably go like 60-70%. It's not gonna smash me, but I like the idea. Like if Ribas wins a close decision, maybe she can strike and, you know, Rose will fall off. If Ribas wins a close decision, there's plenty of big time potential scores down, like Igor Severino and Julian Arosa, guys who can put up 115. That I don't know if Ribas even in five rounds can do that. So it's not an all-in fight for that reason, and I'm picking Rose. So And then if you start getting bigger scores, if it ends up being a card with a lot of finishes, maybe Rose's 105 in the main event isn't enough to get there. And just there's going to be so much ownership. I'm going to go with Rose, stack it up in cash, and I'll just be, I'm not on the all-in train, is my quick summary.
Listen, for me, there's two things with Rose. Number one, yes, changing the weight class. It's hard to know how all of her sort of, I would call it domination, would translate to 125, slightly different size opponents. The bigger thing, though, is kind of here, what even what JP's mentioning here in the chat, that I don't know, I feel like Rose is just like, she's her own worst enemy. Sometimes she comes in, looks amazing. She was whooping up Zhang Weili like not that long ago.
Twice. Right?
Yeah, she was dominating the best of the best not that long ago. So I feel like if she comes out and she is meant like just on her game, she will have no problem dispatching with Rebus. I think Rebus, actually her biggest threat is probably her grappling and ability to take Rose down, but Rose gets back up. She knows how to, she's a grappler herself and she can get back up. She can get a takedown as well. But I think that if Rebus is landing takedowns, that's when trouble is a brewing for Rose. And you know, if I'm live watching it, I'm live betting those spots if I can. I rarely live bet, by the way. Rebus
start going like this.
Well, I just
rose started, immediately.
You know, it's been a great strategy. I've made a little bit of money back on, and I even did it. I mean, granted, I'm doing like quarter units sticking around. If somebody's winning a fight with grappling and the other guy's a dog, I'm just blind betting $25 every time.
Yeah.
It's turned out pretty well.
Well, if you did it last week, like five people gassed or they're just getting the decision to the other side. Yeah, that is not a bad way. You could get some plus 700. Live is crazy. The thing I don't like about the live betting is just I feel like I'm not watching it in real time. Whatever stream or TV
you're
I'm
like 50 using, seconds behind,
it's yeah. just I feel like if I was just at the arena and could see it in real time, I could just do better. But I also think the sports book isn't seeing it in real time either. So, you know, there's that. But like I just the live is just a little bit of a concern that I'm watching it 40 seconds later. So I don't know what the hell happened in the last 40 seconds. I don't feel like there's an edge there. But in general, yeah, I think Rose is better. I think Rose should win. But it's a 5-round main event. I disagree with you, Sniper. I think this one, because of how many crappy fights are on this card that all look like 70, 80 pointers, I think we're not going to see very many, if any, 100-plus point scores. And when you're competing with 80s and 90s and you have 5 rounds to get it done, you usually get an 80 or 90. Like, it is unusual. It would be crazy if these two women fought 5 rounds. And, Monk, you know the numbers. But if these two ladies fought 5 rounds, there was no takedowns on either side, and they just didn't squeak their way into 89 to 95 points, I would be shocked. Mm-hmm. And I will be shocked on this card if 90-plus points is not a nut score, especially for the underdog, but even for Rose, because I don't think that salaries will be spent in full on this card. So I'm a little bit more all in on this fight. I think if you're playing a mini max, or if you're playing a giant contest on DraftKings that requires the perfect lineup or somewhere something close to it, it's really hard to achieve that if you don't lock button a couple of fights. Like, you have to do that, or you just never find, like, there's just too many variables. So you have to take some stands, and that's why I'm always looking for the fights that are the all-in fights. And hey, sometimes it's Jan Kutalaba and it doesn't work out.
Felipe Lins fucking everybody up.
I mean, you know what? The 20% of my lineups that were on Lins actually look good. You know, even when I do an all-in, I always load up enough of the opponent to get leverage in case it doesn't work. So I think this is an all-in fight. I prefer the Rose side, but I will give Rebus a fighter's chance. More so, though, if just Rose isn't in the right mental state, which is not some... I don't think we can predict it. I don't think we can predict. I don't know how to predict that. Like,
can I listen to some Pat Barry interviews?
No, I don't, you know... Why is it just the female fighters we got to worry about their boyfriends? Like, that feels sexist to me. That's fucked up.
No, no.
That's not feminist at all.
The Rose situation is different than, like, The only other time I mentioned a woman's significant other is if it's Mackenzie Dern, because I want to know her status.
What about Andrea Lee?
Well, he's a racist.
Yeah, that's what multiple I'm saying. Of them. Multiple of them. Yeah, yeah. Doesn't she have the crazy boyfriends too? So I don't know. I don't know. I think I don't care about that stuff. I just know that she.
Wait, Rose. This is not feminist or sexist here.
It's only women fighters. So there's no male fighter that you're like, oh,
Ian Gary.
What about him? He just wins. I'm not worried about the cuckiest
of all cucks. We talk about Captain Cuck every podcast.
All right. All right.
True.
That's fair. Okay, so let's just talk about our kill shots for this card. An underdog that can come through and make the winning lineup. Let's see who you got.
Igor Severino. Nice and easy.
Easy choice right there. Severino. We all like Severino.
Mm-hmm.
That was an easy choice. How about you, Monk? Where are you going with your underdog pick?
Another line I think is way too wide. I'll take Montserrat Rendon.
You just messed me up. I like Montserrat. I like when the female fighters can grapple and get a submission. I think that's a great pick, and that was going to be mine. So we will pivot here. Man, you messed me up with that one, dude. Jarno. I'll go Jarno here as the cheapest fighter on the card to get a win. I don't think Jarno is likely to break the slate simply because a lot of other underdogs are probably going to win, like the two that you guys both mentioned, both of whom I like. But I'll go Jarno because I think he is an underdog that can win his fight, and I'm definitely fading his opponent at 9,500 so or 9,400. So I'll go Jarno. How about that?
There we go.
I don't hate it. At all.
I was going to go with Montserrat though, because
Monster, Monk's got to rate that nickname pretty highly.
Montserrat, yeah, it's pretty good.
Monster is pretty bad, but like it's a formula. Like if it's a women's MMA fight and one of them can grapple, and we haven't seen any grappling from the other one, this happened last week, didn't we? Just play the 8K girl.
Amarim.
Yeah, like for the same reason. Like, oh, Amarim wins by submission all the time. Opponent has no grappling. Oh, let's assume
she pulled guard. That was such a sweet.
And you know what? And the other one jumped on top. And that's why I said on the breakdown, I think it was Corey McKenna, I said she is going to engage in the grappling because that's what she does. I said it on the breakdown. I said she will. You're worried about the takedown. This other girl will engage in the grappling because when they do that, they continue to do it. And that happened last week. I don't think Zelensky.
She subbed her three times.
What's
in that fight? She subbed her three times in that fight.
Yeah, she was Brazilian tapping. That half
Brazilian tapping. The ref then touched her and said stop, and then said keep going. And then she tapped her for a third fucking time.
Yeah, that was... By the way, I don't even understand how that ref, like the UFC, should be able to step in and fire refs.
Nah, you got to keep it neutral. You don't want the UFC involved with refs. The commissions need to be more active.
He touched her and said stop. And then I was like, what the fuck? I'm screaming at my monitor. Like, what are you doing? And that was from Beltran, I think. So a good ref.
Yeah, everybody makes mistakes too. Honestly, makes mistakes.
I'm not going to give him the, he's not Mazzagatti. Mazzagatti is a special one, right?
Well, that Russian guy who almost got somebody murdered and actually did get removed.
Benoit Saint-Denis. He almost robbed us of Benoit Saint-Denis.
Ridiculous.
Benoit Saint-Denis.
So I lost my train of thought, but that will do it for the... You guys, if you enjoy the breakdown, make sure to hit the like button. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. For those of you who don't know, if you're not subscribed and have the notification bell, we're betting all the March Madness games too. We got a lot going on here on the DFS Army YouTube channel.
Should pull up the tracker this week. We won it. Me and the prop sub at DFS Army went up 8 units yesterday. Just yesterday.
Sheesh. Yeah,
we have a pick'em sub. Sniper is one of the lead coaches of our pick'em sub, Prize Picks, Sleeper, all that, Prize Picks, Sleeper, Fliff.
Baseball is here. We
underdog.
We crushed baseball last year. I'm so happy it's back.
And the model for MLB is spectacular as well. So it's going to be a big year. If you play the Pick'em games, make sure you Kentucky lost. Ooh, okay. Wait a second.
Yep.
I had them as one of the teams that could lose early, so I'm not upset. So but
six, I think I had them going pretty far, so that's not good.
No. Kentucky was the 4 seed or the 3 seed?
4.
Yeah. They were a pretender, according to my breakdown, which I did. That is available right here on the DFSR YouTube channel. If you saw it, you would have known, Sniper. Clearly, you didn't watch.
I did. I have that whole region, that top right, is dog shit. I think Houston goes out early, too. I don't like Houston.
Oh, that's the 3 seed, Kentucky? No,
Kansas, the 1 seed. I think they get through like the first 2 rounds and lose. I don't like.
Yeah.
I think Houston's the biggest pretender of the one. So there you go, guys. Go bet them to win the national championship.
Love Houston. Love Houston. Disagree. Love Houston. All right. Good luck on this card, everybody. Enjoy it. We got great cards coming down the road for UFC. This one is a little bit of an appetizer, so we'll get to the we'll try to make some money on it. Trying to enjoy some fights, enjoy some violence. We'll see you guys next time. Good luck, everyone.